Welcome to another edition of Double Cross Radio. Tonight, we are going to be joined by a special guest we'll be introducing in just a moment. But first, I want to say hello to my co-host, Drew Lamb and Colby Olson. Hi, guys.
Chuck.
Hey, Chuck. What's up?
Well, we're going to have a great show tonight. I'm going to get right to it, and I'm going to introduce our guest. Christopher Cantwell is going to join us tonight for the entire show. He has been described as possessing various positive or negative traits, but as I read his words and listen to his interviews, I see Chris as the libertarian movement's conscience. He asks tough questions that others fear to even consider, and regardless of whether you agree or not, you have to admire his courage to bring these issues to our attention. So I will stop rambling, and I'm going to welcome Christopher Cantwell, an anarchist, an atheist, and an asshole, by his own words. So welcome, Chris, to Double Cross Radio.
Why do you call me an asshole, bro? What the fuck?
Well, it's just how it is.
No, I'm kidding with you, but no, thank you so much for the warm
he's
introduction.
He's also a very really good, he makes a living partially as a comedian, too, so.
Chuck, you really got to be nicer to our guests. I mean,
Yeah, I mean, I just came on here and you call me an asshole. I mean, you know, it's just, so what if it's in the headline of my website? I mean, what gives you the right to do something like that, you know? And, yeah. But of course, I'm kidding. No, I am an anarchist, I am an atheist, and I am somewhat of an asshole because I really don't care about other people's feelings. My whole point is to just tell them what is, you know? A is A. Objective reality stands regardless of your feelings. And if it makes you uncomfortable what I say, then maybe you need to be made uncomfortable. It's sort of my bit. So I'm just kidding when I say, hey, why'd you call me that? You know, it's my whole bit, you know, is to sort of throw people's feels to the wind and say what is.
Yeah, and, you know, that's it's actually a great start to our conversation in that there's a lot of people that just seem to feel like they have a right to not be offended. Or something like, I haven't ever been able to discover that even any philosopher's writings, that there's some kind of natural right to not be offended. If something offends you, well, that's just how it is. Get on with it.
I've never seen a philosopher say that you don't have a right to be offended, but there are, like, so many people who have said that there are protected classes of people, right? So that you can't say something bad about this group, you can't say something bad about these people, you know, you can't, you know, you can criticize the politicians, but, you know, the soldiers, they are, you know, they are just there to protect our freedom, or the police, or they're just there to keep law and order, or, you know, women are exactly the same as men, regardless of all the many differences between us, you know, so these are the things that they come up with, and they're not necessarily concerned about offending people, because they're more than happy to offend, you know, civilian white males. However,
because we have white privilege.
Well, yes, exactly. Our white privilege, that it does not include the privileges of government agents. You know, we are so they are so happy to offend us. So there's no fear aware of where you can't offend people. It's just a question of who you're allowed to offend, and apparently it's me, because I get offended all the time, right? Like, I am constantly, you know, have things thrown at me, which I find extraordinarily offensive, and I don't really too much complain about the offense handed to me. I just say, like, hey, here's where your facts are wrong, and I don't care how you feel about it.
Yeah, and that's one thing. We're actually going to talk about that a little bit later. The first thing I want to talk about, because I'm really interested in this, and then I came to know this by listening to your interview with Thomas Woods. I hadn't actually read this interview, or not the interview, the essay that was Jeffrey Tucker had written, but you were on Thomas Woods' show, and I subscribed to his podcast, and I thought, wow, he was really great on this show. Everybody, I've listened to this thing three times already. I still pick up stuff I missed, and it's on our Facebook page, a link. You guys need to go and listen to it. It's a fabulous thing. But you talk about, this is the first I'd heard about it, that Jeffrey wrote this essay on, Foundation for Economic Education, FEE, and it's kind of out there. I mean, he's trying to, it actually sounds like something a contemporary liberal would write about, you know, all these emotional issues, and we have to do things for emotional reasons, and there's no, you know, we're not rational thinkers anymore. It's like all the things that, I mean, he's supposed to be an Austrian economist. I just don't understand how he got to this point. But you're going to have a debate with him coming up.
Yeah, I'm going to be entering the same stage as Jeffrey Tucker this October in New York City. And we haven't actually discussed, like, what it is that we're debating. Robert Murphy will be moderating the debate, as it's been called. We haven't really discussed it, but I just assumed that we were sort of asked to come and discuss this divide between what Tucker has coined the humanitarians and the brutalists. And for your audience, if they're not familiar with the background on this, and I would encourage them all to listen to the Tom Woods interview, because it was a really great discussion between me and Mr. Woods. But the idea was that Jeffrey had sort of written this article that made this sort of false dichotomy between what he called brutalists, okay, which is people like myself, but people like Tom Woods, people like Lou Rockwell, who, you know, try to keep libertarianism focused to a concept known as the non-aggression principle, which is to say that as long as you're not initiating force or fraud against people, then it's basically all good, right? That you haven't done anything legally actionable, and, you know, within that we can all choose our free associations and whatnot. So, you know, that's going to permit things like racism and sexism and homophobia and stuff. And if you're not comfortable with that, then fine. But, you know, libertarianism isn't terribly concerned with those subjects, right?
Yeah, I think this is that's where he makes his first mistake in his piece, is that he's saying this is a return to tribalism, and he's trying to just use ad hominem attacks. Is that there's something wrong with associating with people of like-minded views. I mean, that's what we do. People don't go and you know, camp out in the midst of the enemy. They don't. It's kind of uncomfortable. They like to hang out with people that have similar beliefs, and you know, the people, the Baptists go to the Baptist church. They don't spend, you know, one Sunday a month at different churches, you know, going to a mosque or something. I don't think that's tribalism. I think that's just rational action.
Yeah, I mean, people tend to associate with people who, you know, are similar to them, you know. And to some extent, I mean, it does extend to race, you know. Like, it would be silly to sort of ignore that there are white neighborhoods and black neighborhoods and Asian neighborhoods and Hispanic neighborhoods. And, you know, people who want to live in different neighborhoods, they certainly don't think that any of them should be forbidden from doing so. But, you know, if you're a person who wants to, you know, if you're a white supremacist and you want to live only amongst white people, like, I just don't think it's, like, a good idea to force you to live amongst black people, right? Like, I don't think that's going to help the black people in your neighborhood anyway.
And, well,
yeah. Yeah, so, like, you know, I think that the best thing that we can do is just sort of respect people's preferences, because that's all that these things are, right? That, you know, people have certain ideas and they prefer to be amongst people who agree with them, and that's fine as long as they're not initiating force. The only thing that I'm really, you know, look, there's all types of behaviors that I would like to alter in the world, and, you know, and but my primary concern is when people are forcing me to do things. If people aren't forcing me to do things, then I'm really okay with everything else, because it doesn't, you know, have that negative of an effect on me.
Yeah, and in the free market of ideas, the people that are the haters and the violent people, they tend to be marginalized just by their own words. We don't need restrictions, further restrictions against them, because they don't have a lot of people marching to their drumbeat.
Well, unfortunately, that's not the truth of violent people. Like, violent people in today's society are actually very much rewarded, right? They're police and soldiers and politicians and whatnot, and they commit extraordinarily high levels of violence against human society, and they're very much rewarded against it for that, and that's what I want to change.
Yeah, and, you know, if you look at Rosa Parks, she was being discriminated against by a bus company, but it was a municipal bus company, and so it was the force of government that was discriminating against her. It wasn't businesses. The businessman would be an idiot to try and alienate his customers in that manner.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, what Rosa Parks and Jim Crow laws and all of those sorts of things were government imposing segregation on people. So that's, you know, a problem, you know, because I think that most businesses would probably benefit from allowing as many people to purchase their goods and services as possible. That's an interference in the marketplace that's unjust. I mean, if you're a person who wants to sort of cater to a niche market, you know, if you're a person who wants to sell, you know, white power products or something, I mean, sell them to people who are white supremacists. I mean, it just would seem to make sense that, you know, if that's the case, I mean, you can serve a niche market and still succeed, but you're going to be a more successful business if you're catering to as wide an audience as possible. So I think that, you know, diversity would certainly be encouraged in the marketplace.
Yeah, I can't, right off the top of my head, I can't think of another example, but, I guess I can. They used to have, in the 19th century, during the Civil War and afterwards, they had black and white units serving together. I mean, there wasn't any segregation in the military, but after, into the 20th century, time it got to World War II, there really was a lot of discrimination against blacks in the military. Well, that was government-enforced discrimination. That was a government program. It wasn't. It would make them a better fighting force to have everybody working together and not have all those that infighting and all that stuff, but that was something that had to be created by government. I don't think it would have materialized in a volunteer fighting force of people that were fighting for the same cause. They would be brothers in arms.
I can see that theory. I can see another theory to it too, but the problem is that we let government decide, right? So I mean, you might have units that were better off. I mean, there are going to be people in this world who like just sort of feel better around being people who look like them, and I prefer that we all, you know, didn't have that preference, but you know, some people do, and if a private unit wanted to do that, you know, then that's their issue. But the problem that we create is that a government is going to send an entire nation of people to war, and a lot of them don't get along with each other. So it's like, you know, the idea of keeping them separate from each other might be better off for the war unit. I don't know how pervasive racism was between whites and blacks during World War II, but it was certainly pervasive between whites and Japanese people, because, of course, they created internment camps for people who have
No, it was me. Colby got disconnected, and so I got to reconnect him here. So, and I tried to do it one way, and it put this call on hold. So, sorry about that. We're back live.
So, Chuck, to add Colby, you just hit add to call.
Yeah, I'm just going to add him in here now. I thought I was adding him, but I was answering his call. So, I apologize to the listeners. We were having such a good discussion, too.
Did some portion of what I was saying get cut off?
Because no,
I know when we discuss race, it's very important that every word gets across.
Yes.
Some of these things.
I think that you guys are racist for discussing race.
Yeah. Well, yes, of course, you know, because if we say anything that is not, agreeable to the white liberals, then that's what makes us racist.
You just need to check your privilege, damn it.
Well, yeah.
This is something I talk to a lot of people about, actually, and it's the demographics from the left and how they actually only push the one-sided agenda and they lose the whole purpose of freedom in the sense, because all they do is they put something on a pedestal. So like the LGBT community, or like they've done with the Violence Against Women Act, even. Violence against anyone is wrong. But once you put that up there, did we lose somebody from the call?
Oh. No, we're all here.
Okay, once you put that up there and you put that person on the pedestal with rights above another, you actually completely destroy the entire principle of what you're trying to find, which they normally say is equality, but it never does that. And I mean, well, the left and right would jump on that perfectly if they would do it for all instead of just one demographic.
Well, that's an interesting thing that you bring up. You know, I'm not familiar with the exact text of the Violence Against Women Act, but I would say that, you know, if you create a Violence Against Women Act, what you are doing is you're saying that, you know, this particular group of people is some victimized class. Now, there's a few problems with that. The first of which is women are actually, in domestic violence situations, almost, if not equally, if not more guilty than men, that women are actually doing just as much violence to men as men are doing to women. If you look at it, women are something like 43% of reported domestic violence cases in the United Kingdom, and that doesn't account for the fact that men are a whole lot less likely to report domestic violence against them. It doesn't account for the fact that a lot of times when a woman commits violence against a man, she's actually getting another man to do it. She'll entice a boyfriend with sex to assault her husband. She'll, you know, sort of play those things and sort of get, you know, trick another man into doing violence against her husband, and that never accounts into it. Women, you know, will manipulate men into doing things for them, and that creates a great deal of violence. Now, for every 100 men who kill their wives, there's 75 women who kill their husbands. And again, that doesn't even take into account the fact that women hire men to kill their husbands, that they entice men with sex to kill their husbands. So it would actually seem that women are actually disproportionately more guilty of violence towards men than men are towards women.
And I have this is an anecdotal story, so it doesn't prove anything, but the only domestic violence that I personally knew the mm-hmm. victim and the perpetrator was a woman who put a pillow over her husband's head and shot him and killed him. And so, you know,
that's a hell of a thing to be a party to, or to know somebody who was involved in, or whatever.
I knew both of them. They weren't necessarily my favorite people. They were customers in my store. And
I've known domestic violence situations in the opposite direction. I mean, I had a roommate once who beat up his girlfriend, and it was terrifying to me. And you know, my instinctual reaction was to get between them, and I said, you know, what are you out of your mind, guy? You can't touch. She's a woman. What are you doing? You're a large man. She's like, a little woman. What are you doing? You know, and I stood between him and his girlfriend, and like got his girlfriend out of the house, and all of this, and then she just kept on coming back. She kept on coming back, and there was nothing that I could do to keep her out of the house. I'm like, this guy's hurting you. What are you doing? And I fist fought my roommate, you know, to protect her from it, and she just kept on coming back for it, which, you know, at some point I just came to the conclusion that this is what she wanted. And that's sick to me. Like, I can't imagine, you know, a consensual, violent relationship, but, I mean, that's the best description that I could come up with it, that, you know,
All right, we're having some technical difficulties there. I'm going to try to reconnect everybody and get back on with our interview with Chris Cantwell. Please hang in there, you guys, and we'll get this rolling here. I'm assuming that I am broadcasting live right now. Chuck was hosting the call, and I'm going to pull in Chuck and our guest here. And I think we are back. We are live. This is Drew Lamb. We've been interviewing Chris Cantwell and having some major technical difficulties here. So I'm going to try to patch in everybody. Chuck was having some kind of a malfunction. All right, Colby, did I pick you up there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. I lost Chuck there for a minute. I don't know. I'm going to try to pull him back in.
Well, while we're going
through this, I'll just...
All right. Hey, Chuck, can you add Chris?
Yes, I will.
All right. He might have just said, hey, screw you guys.
No, he didn't. He's good. He might be on this other one.
So, Colby, Chuck's trying to connect Chris Cantwell. I've been really disturbed by this shooting by the sheriff deputies that happened here in Ashland, Oregon, where I'm at right now. This guy had been evicted from his home. And the sheriff was coming over to physically evict him. U.S. Bank was foreclosing upon his home. And he'd been fighting this since 2011. And so the sheriff shows up, and then somehow they gained access to the premises, and he was there with a shotgun, and they shot him, fired two shots, killed the guy.
I'm fully up on the situation on that one, actually.
Pardon me?
They didn't just bring sheriffs. They brought the SWAT team.
Well, they were planning... It seemed like you planned to have a battle with this guy. And, you know, like, you see the picture in the Ashland Daily Tidings and of this one guy. I don't know who he is. He's a sheriff deputy, and he's wearing his desert tactical shirt. He's got his camo pants on and his AR, and like he was like proud that he's probably the guy that shot him, and he just seemed to be like proud that he killed somebody. You know, he bagged that guy, and you know, he had his tags, and he went hunting, and he bagged himself a government protester. This guy was flying his flag upside down and didn't pay his mortgage, so he had to die. And I've been really disturbed by all of this, because people just the response from the locals has been like, well, you know, he had it coming. He was flying the flag upside down. He was anti-government, you know, so he had it coming.
I kind of got in a couple of battles on Facebook, which I didn't really go too deep into it. I saw a lot of other people who were outraged as well. And, I mean, it's completely understandable, though, because you're talking about a 70, what was he, 78?
74.
74, sorry, 74-year-old man. I mean, it's been reported that he lost his wife. So, obviously, if you think about this, you've got two people living in a household that are probably elderly, probably on Social Security, which, you know, that's kind of a different situation, you know. He loses his wife, he loses half of their financial benefit, and then his house gets foreclosed on because of this. And then, I mean, you're looking at someone that's on their last leg. They've got nothing left. You're creating a homeless man who's probably, obviously, a veteran, which doesn't give him any other standing, but at the same time, you're looking at a person that's in a very desperate situation.
He was a Navy veteran. His name was Earl Harris, and he was 74 years old. And it just, you know, the way the newspaper, the Mail Tribune, makes it sound like he had it coming because he was anti-government. He flew the flag upside down.
Apparently, there's reports they found 8 IEDs, quote-unquote, at his house.
And they said they found grenades. Nobody has grenades. I mean, you could buy, like, empty grenades, you know, online. It's not a big deal.
They're called inert.
Yeah, inert. I'm not ex-military. I'm just an anarchist, and I don't have any grenades. By the way, I don't have inert grenades either. But you know, they made a big deal out of this. It just seemed like in a paper they were really trying to frame this. You know, like this guy had it coming. He was anti-government. He deserved to be shot. It just bothers me because, you know, I've worked in real estate for over 2 decades, and unfortunately I've had to conduct at least 100 evictions, you know, because I managed property for Satan himself, and some of them were physical and required, you know, sheriff assistance, the thing is that I've had situations that weren't good where I was able to make a judgment call and, you know, and go, you know, we don't have to do this right now. And that's what they could have done. They didn't have to escalate this. They could have just taken a step back, you know, talked to him. They didn't even have to do it.
It's not even that. Look at the property. You're talking about a 1970s trailer. It's probably got a well.
I've driven by there. It's a pile of garbage, you know.
And here's the thing is you're talking about $10,000 to a $20,000 property. There is not actually quote unquote to standard habitable for you to sell it.
No, the bank isn't going to gain anything more, you know, by losing a day or losing a year or losing 2 years or whatever. You know, this didn't need to happen like this. But it's like, yeah, these guys had to kill somebody. They were on a mission. I think somebody like wanted to like see what it would feel like to kill somebody. You know, I'm just going to come out and say it because this, nobody needed to get shot. You know, and he wasn't shooting at deputies. He wasn't pointing a shotgun at them. He just didn't follow their instructions. So he had to die.
And that's a death penalty offense now, I guess.
Yeah, right? You know?
I was, I lost the call for a few minutes here, and I'm trying to catch the context of this. I mean, what was the reason that they wanted this guy out of this property?
They were serving an eviction notice. It was a foreclosure. And he was contesting it in court, and the judge had refused to. I guess he didn't say he had standing. I don't know how you could be, you're a party in a foreclosure. I don't know how you could not have standing. But something was wrong with his appeal. He had technicality or something, and they just threw it out. And he was refiling his appeal, and they were coming with an eviction for the foreclosure. And he was trying to tell him, says, I'm not leaving. I'm still fighting this in court. And, you know, and Drew's right. They didn't have to go there. Well, that's one of the comments that someone in the newspaper chat put in there. He said, this guy, I mean, how long do they have to wait? 3 hours, 6 hours, 9 hours? I mean, you know, what's up with that? And it's like somehow this guy was inconveniencing them, and so he deserved to die. I was just like...
Well, my thing here, you know, when I hear about issues like this one, I do try to bring it back to property rights. And I mean, like, you know, a foreclosure generally means somebody didn't pay their bill, you know. And I do believe that a person who owns a property and is dealing with someone who doesn't pay a bill has the right to use, you know, whatever level of force is necessary to regain control over the property. But it does sort of seem like, from the context that you guys are given, that it was, you know, sort of blown out of proportion.
It's extenuating circumstances as well. I mean...
Yeah, I think that there might have also been a case where he had recently lost his wife, and I don't think he really had a will to live.
That's unfortunate, but you know that has nothing to do with somebody else's property rights. And of course, the banking system in this country is a damn fraud in and of itself. That the bank sort of like loans you money that it doesn't have in order for you to buy a house. And then when you don't give it back the money that it didn't have in the first place, then they come and get you. And that's some serious trouble with the banking industry.
I've actually seen some case log about situations like this where somebody was so intelligent that they found out the real truth behind things, that if the bank doesn't have the original deed to the house, they win in court.
I've seen some of that. That sounds sort of like sovereign citizeny to me, and a lot of that stuff, I mean, there's valuable things that you can learn in it, but a lot of the things in that sort of movement, like the creditors and commerce and guys like this, I mean, some of the things that they do, they've got these sort of really charismatic speakers that'll charge you thousands of dollars to have them tell you how that, you know, you can abide in society without obeying laws, and a lot of it's not entirely true, which is why they make you like sign like a contract saying, hey, this is entertain only before you go in there. So
yeah, and I'm sure that the whole situation could have been solved and resolved. It might have taken another few days, a week, without somebody dying. That's the whole point. And it's the guy may have been in the wrong. He may have lost his trailer anyway. The sheriff's deputies, they gave him an order. He didn't respond, and they shot him.
Oh, you didn't obey the government? Wow.
We decided that it's a death penalty offense to not follow the instructions of the police, and they can be the judge, jury, and executioner. They don't need to go to trial.
That's sort of how the police work, right? I mean, yeah. if you get pulled over for speeding, that's not like a polite request to have a chat. I mean, the officer is threatening to murder you. He's not saying, hey, would you mind pulling your car over so we can discuss the rate of acceleration? No, he's saying, your car is about to stop, and I don't care if it's because you put it in park or because I run it off the road and shoot you in the face. I mean, that's the nature of law enforcement in the world, unfortunately.
Yeah, you know, as I've told some people, we post, I don't know, about a couple times a month, we put up something about a police really being just an egregious violation of law and not have any punishment for it. And people kind of complained about it to me one time. Says, I could post 2 stories a day about this kind of thing and never run out of material. It's so bad today in this country. This isn't how it was 40 years ago. This is a recent development.
No, it was always like this. It's just that there wasn't the reporting. I mean, police have always, you know, the situation with police has always been, do what I say or I kill you, right? I mean, that's what laws are. Laws are death threats. You know, it's do what I say, or I'm going to use whatever level of force I need to bring you into compliance with it. I mean, all the way back to George Washington. I mean, these people just got done fighting a revolution, and the George Washington administration laid a tax on whiskey, and some guys were like, hey, we just got done fighting a revolution over taxes. I'm not going to do this. And that's what you had, something called the Whiskey Rebellion. So, I mean, it always has been that police have been brutal, ruthless tyrants, but they never had quite as many laws to enforce as they do today. Today, what you have with the regulatory state, the war on drugs, and everything else, is just there's literally nothing that the police can't bother you for. And when there's nothing the police can't bother you for, then there's nothing the police can't kill you for, because it has always been that if you disobey us, we'll murder you.
It seems like that's pretty much how it goes. And even if they don't, and they just seem like they're very abusive of civil liberties.
The abuse of civil liberties is a death threat. I think it's sort of important to get the point across here. That like if there's a DWI checkpoint, right? If there's a checkpoint, you know, forget whether it's DWI or license or registration or inspection. If there's a checkpoint on the highway, the checkpoint on the highway is you will stop your car or we will fucking murder you. I mean, that's what it is. You know, it's not a polite request for you to stop your car.
There's a bigger problem with that, though, because that checkpoint's not legal.
Well, I don't care if it's legal or not. I mean, if they repealed the Fourth Amendment tomorrow and made it legal, would that be make it okay for a bunch of goons to stop me on the highway and steal my money and threaten to murder me? No.
No, definitely not. I mean, we've got these stupid photo enforcement vans here in the valley. I mean, and there's actually there's a Facebook page that posts where they're at, what they're doing. Because, I mean, we have people that are getting tickets, and I got a ticket personally. The first month I was back from the military, I got a ticket here. They sent it to Texas. I was registered under Colby D. Olson and Colby Damon Olson in the DMV. My license got suspended from a photo enforcement ticket, and I was on an off-school day in a school zone doing 5 miles over when it wasn't a school day.
Yeah. And that's I've seen situations. We've got, I'm originally from Long Island, and they put in the red light cameras not so long ago. And then what they did was they installed the red light cameras, and in Long Island, you're allowed to make a right turn on red after you stop. And what they did in Long Island was they put in a bunch of these red light cameras, and then they removed or they added no turn on red signs so that you can't turn on red at that intersection. So people would go and they would turn on, they'd be leaving their neighborhood and making a right turn on red after stopping like they had done thousands of times before. And they make the right turn on red, and then this camera is taking a picture of them. And they do this every day for, 2-3 weeks until they get the first ticket. And then 3 weeks of tickets show up in their mailbox because they were not notified.
Pop.
Yeah. It's an obscene, sick thing, and what they've done in other places, I don't know that they've done it in Suffolk County yet, but they've actually tuned down the yellow times on the lights, right? So if you've gone through a light, 100 times where you said, okay, this yellow is going to last for X amount of time, what they've done is they've actually tuned that down so that you're actually, to drive up revenue for the ticket machines. And the ticket machines, by the way, the red light cameras, are generally run, not that I feel any better about giving the money to the government, but they're generally run by a private corporation. These things are for-profit things. The revenues are largely privatized from the automated traffic ticket system. So this is a private corporation, getting in bed with the government to put money in the pockets of the shareholders who are often funding the campaigns of people. It's one of the most perverse, disgusting things that you can witness a government do.
We have both of those. We have another system besides that, actually. I don't know if Chuck and Drew know this, but downtown, when we go to meetings at headquarters, those people that are the meter maids are actually for a corporation that's out of a different, I think it's in Seattle, actually.
And I think it's in Arizona.
They're privatized. You can call different numbers for them. They're all over the place. And what they do is they're privatized, and that's what they do, is they just walk around and write tickets all day. And you're not even getting revenue for it, actually.
Yeah, and again, not that I feel any better about giving money to the government, but, it would be one thing, the theory of fines and stuff, when, you're dealing with public lands, is that it's supposed to theoretically come back to you. We all sort of know that it never does, and just giving money to the government is, the worst thing in the world. But at the same time, if there's anything worse than that, then it's giving money to, a private entity who only gained the authority to do it through government. If you have a shopping center and you own your parking lot and you want to charge for parking, that's fine. It's your parking lot. You own it. But when government does it, what they're doing is they're claiming monopoly over all property that is not owned, and they're zoning off property for ownership a lot of times without a parking lot. So I lived in New Hampshire for a while. I'm about to move back there. And the guys there, they follow the meter maid around, and they still have the coin-operated parking meters. And so they'll put a coin in the meter right in front of the parking meter person to avoid them writing a ticket. And there's been, a lot of controversy over this. And people say, well, you agree to park downtown, so you have to pay. So why are you interfering? And I'm like, well, the state has no authority to just claim ownership over all of this land because they created a zoning law situation where somebody didn't have the option to buy a parking lot for their business. The state decided, or the city in this case, the city decided to say, you're only allowed to park on the street, and when you park on the street, you have to pay us. And I say, well, the city didn't do anything to earn that property, so how are they claiming ownership over it? And the only answer is this magical concept of democracy that the people chose these people to rule over them. And I don't accept that at all.
Yeah, speaking of New Hampshire, you were banned from, is it Porkfest or is it Free State Project or what was it that they, because of your views on using defense?
So I was expelled from the Free State Project. The Free State Project runs the Porcupine Freedom Festival that comes up every year in June in Lancaster, New Hampshire. And so from my, you can be expelled from the Free State Project and still attend Porkfest because you don't have to be a member of the Free State Project to attend Porkfest. But they sort of took this very heavy-handed and very tragic PR move of also barring me from that event. And it hasn't worked out well for them at all, because most people who are actually involved in the project, you know, think that even if they disagree with my position, that it's a conversation worth having. But the Free State Project basically barred me from the organization because there was an incident in Concord, New Hampshire, that the Concord, New Hampshire Police Department wanted to get a Bearcat, an armored personnel carrier, a weapon of war, essentially. And they applied to the Department of Homeland Security, the United States Department of Homeland Security, for a grant in order to obtain this weapon of war. And when they applied for that grant, what they said was, well, we need it because we have domestic terrorist problems, including but not limited to Free Staters, members or participants of the Free State Project. Now, that was sort of ridiculous because there's been no violence by Free Staters whatsoever. They're not a violent group of people, of course. They're anarchists. They're non-aggressionists. They don't believe in initiation of force against their fellow man. But the Department of Homeland Security sort of said, hey, we call them terrorists anyway. So I said to them, I said, hey, look, they have a war on terrorism. They say that you're a terrorist, and they just bought a two-ton war machine. Maybe you want to start thinking about defending yourself. And that upset a lot of people. To defend yourself against the government, I mean, oh my God. I mean, the implications involved in that, right? Because, I mean, they have so much force available to them that the level of violence that you would need to inflict upon them to defend yourself is just unthinkable. So to even mention it in a theoretical or philosophical thing is absolutely forbidden. And if you talk about doing it from a strategic angle, oh boy, even cop block will ban you.
Yes.
Is this where I need to chime in?
No, I have to say this is amazing sometimes that the people who are supposed to be the most tolerant turn out to be the least, but that's how it goes.
I don't give a shit about tolerance, guys. I'm not worried about tolerance. I give a shit about people standing up for what it is that they say they believe in. And just, if you say...
But they're so intolerant, they're using force to shut you up.
No, that's inaccurate. So nobody's forcing me to do anything, right? I mean, I'm still free to write whatever I want. They're just choosing their freedom of association. Right, and if I don't, if I don't allow communists to publish communist propaganda on my blog, right?
Okay,
I'm not using force against those people. So these people are free to have whatever standards they want. The problem that I see with it is that they claim to adhere to a standard that is the non-aggression principle, which is to say, you know, that the initiation of force is forbidden, and the way you forbid that is by responding with defensive force. Right. So if you say that is your principle, if you say that's what you stand by, and then you say to me that I'm not even allowed to talk about using violence against the people who victimize me, well, now you're violating your principles, and there's the issue.
Yeah,
I completely agree with that. It's, you know, I went to war twice, and you know, I chose a greater power. I chose to save. I chose to be medevac, which is I don't have to fire. I've got other people to do that for me. I'm a wonderful shot all the time. And, you know, there's a lot of people that do things in different ways. I kind of did conscientious objector in a different way. I didn't actually fire it upon people because I was medevac. I was there saving lives and, you know, helping things out. And a lot of these people, they still don't understand. The simple fact is, if someone's going to take your life, you have every right within you to defend your life. And a lot of them are jumping on this little crusade where Chris Cantwell's mean. And I've seen this on Facebook because a lot of mutual friends are passed between. And it's like, how is he wrong? If someone's going to take your life, you have every right to defend yourself. If you didn't instigate this, why is it a problem?
Well, I think what they're actually arguing against is that they're not an immediate threat to your life itself. That they're saying, well, as long as you obey them, well, then they're not a threat to your life. And I said, well, the whole point, I'm an anarchist, the whole point of this is that I don't want to obey them, right? So if you're telling me my choices are to obey or die, and that you're a libertarian who tells me that I should obey because otherwise they'll kill me, well, I understand that as a strategic angle, right? If you're telling me, hey, pal, live another day, but don't make a moral argument against what I'm saying, because I'm making a moral argument, you know, in 95% of these cases where I'm saying, you know, look, Jared Miller, you know, this guy went and shot a couple of cops in Vegas, right, or in Nevada. And look, you absolutely don't have the right to shoot up a pizzeria. You absolutely don't have the right to terrorize a bunch of innocent people. You absolutely don't have the right to murder some innocent person outside of a Walmart. You don't have the right to shoot your gun in the air in a Walmart and chase everybody out of it. But those police are a threat to the lives of everyone. When they go out on the highways, they're threatening to kill people with every traffic stop they make. Just because they stop for lunch real quick doesn't make them innocent.
That's right. Give them enough time, they'll hang themselves. I wanted to shift gears real quick because I also wanted to talk about a piece you wrote back a while ago, several months ago. There was a video, Storm Clouds Gathering, a fellow by the name of Hawkins put out, and you wrote a
that's
fabulous.
That's Aaron Hawkins.
Yeah, yep. You wrote a fabulous rebuttal to that. And I don't think we're going to have a lot of time to talk about it tonight, but I'd like just to get your kind of overview of it, and then I have a couple of comments to add to it.
Well, the overview would simply be that, you know, Hawkins, like probably 90%+ of the world, just thinks that, like, people can't manage their own affairs. That he's saying that, like, look, I don't believe in government, but we can't have markets either, right? Well, you can have government or you can have markets, right? You know, those are your two choices, and he doesn't really understand that. And he goes and he picks out, like, all these, like, terrible examples from around the world of what he says are failures of the free market. And one of the things that he brings up is, like, in poor rural areas of Mexico where the government isn't involved there, but the drug cartel sort of run things, right? Well, that's not because there's, like, any lack of government in Mexico, right? Like, the government in Mexico, it's, you know, the gun laws in Mexico are pretty strict. You know, the drug laws in Mexico are actually pretty strict. What the government has done is monopolize protection services and then failed to provide them. So these neighborhoods are overrun with criminal elements and the people are incapable of defending themselves. And so he says that, you know, this is an example of a free market failure. And I'm like, no, you know, if you have a government that threatens to charge you with a felony for protecting yourself and then you are victimized, well, let's just not be surprised when that's the case. And that's just one of many examples of the fallacies that he throws out. And he's been in debates with Stefan Molyneux and a number of other people. And he's just a rude, inconsiderate, unintelligent person who interrupts and doesn't make, logical arguments. And I find him intolerable. And I get annoyed because a lot of libertarians share his content. They think that he's going to bridge the gap between the left and the right. And I just think that's so dangerous and silly. Did I lose you guys again?
Hey, Chris, you're still on. I don't know what's going on, but I hear you loud and clear, and we're still...
I accidentally hit my mute. I'm sorry. One of the comments you made in this, when you were responding to his rejection of the free market, you said, how can you simultaneously believe in non-aggression and reject the free market? You cannot. People are either free to contract for services or they're compelled, and there's no two ways about it. And that's exactly... the truth. I mean, you said you'd refuted probably, I don't know, pages and pages of transcript from his YouTube thing with just three sentences. And that was just awesome. I was so impressed with that. You know, that the people, individuals, they're all rational actors. They do things to satisfy needs and wants that they have. And that's what drives the free market. And that's why it works. They don't. Most of them, anyway, don't act irrationally. They don't go out and do crazy things. There's a few people that are maybe on some antidepressants that kind of go off their rocker, but dress up in Joker uniforms or something. But this, anyway, it
The other thing
is... And you know, the people who are on the antidepressants, let's just not pretend that the government is innocent in that, right? Like, the government is pushing...
It's one that approved them for use, and they're
psychotropic drugs. Well, not only approving them for use, I mean, you know, absent the government approving them for use, you can imagine that there'd be more of them on the market, and maybe some of them would work better. But the problem is that they're pushing these things through the school system. They're saying, you know, the government is heavily regulating, you know, psychiatric medicine. I mean, they're involved in all manner of things, you know, not the least of which is shoving these things down children's throats through the Child Protective Services and stuff like that. So whenever we find out about a shooting and we find out that psychotropic drugs are involved, especially when it's young people in a public school, I mean, you can pin that directly at the feet of the state. But people seem to look at this like a problem with the free market and weapons, and it's so obscene and sick that when I see people doing almost the same thing from, you know, claiming to be from a libertarian or anarchist perspective, I'm absolutely nauseated by it, and I feel a real compulsion to combat these people.
Yeah, I don't know if you've seen a video that Josie Wales did about the what if there was no government, and then she goes around asking people, would you just go out and start engaging in criminal behavior and being immoral and stealing from people, and everybody says, well, no. And, you know, so, because that's everybody's objection, is we need to have all this control and government laws in order to keep the order among people, and then she couldn't find anybody that was willing to be disorderly and be a problem if there wasn't a government. They were all pretty much peaceful people, and that's probably the vast majority of the population.
Well, it's certainly the vast majority of the population, but I also would think it irresponsible to ignore the fact that there are a number of people in this society who would absolutely victimize other people, and especially in the absence of the state, actually, because, mind you, in the absence of the state, then all the state actors, all the people who have been legally victimizing you, are all of a sudden going to have no other, you know, training, and they will victimize people, and there are threats in this society that need to be responded to with violence. My only problem with responding to threats with violence is that the government doesn't do a good job of it, that the government actually empowers these things by hiring them to be the enforcers of the laws, by being the people who write the laws, by being the people who profit from the exercise of them. The problem is not that that there's I believe in like law enforcement, but natural law, basically contracts, and I absolutely believe that there are threats in this society that need to be responded to with violence. I believe that people will need to be killed. I believe that people will need to be punished, but I don't think that the government does a good job of it, because the government rewards the victimizers.
Yeah, there was someone that said, I think it was in one of the chats, and one of the things they said, it would be pretty hard to do a worse job than government's done with the private market security and such. But, you know, I've pointed out on this show before, in the 19th century, second half of the 19th century, the Western United States was largely an anarchistic society, just kind of de facto, because while there were laws and such and there was some law enforcement, it was pretty spotty, and there was a lot of areas that had no law enforcement at all. And the people just, they still didn't have a lot of violence and crime because people kind of took care of that.
Yeah, the violence was resolved rather rapidly because people had guns. And, you know, if you were the type of guy who liked to go run around and stick people up, you probably didn't have a rather long lifespan in that society.
They catch you stealing a horse, they just hang you on the spot.
Yeah.
Still a law in Montana, actually. Thieving, killing, or taking of livestock, still a blue book law in Montana. You could be hanged for it by a lynch mob.
You know, and in New York, you know, you could make a pretty good living as a stick-up kid in New York. I mean, you could go and rob people all day long, and really nothing will happen to you for many years, you know, unless you just happen to be the unlucky SOB who happens to rob the liquor store when the cop is on the next block. You know, you can do whatever you want in this place because the people have been disarmed. You go to New Hampshire and you try to be a stick-up kid, you get yourself shot, and you might not even make the news. I mean, it's not even a big deal that this is just like some sort of normal you know, thing that, you know, hey, this guy was a criminal, he got himself shot, and we don't really need to be too concerned about it. In most of America today, most of the world indeed,
You know, people who get themselves their hands on, you know, not even a gun, a knife. You know, you take a knife, you know, and you can go rob anybody you want because people are defenseless.
Well, and that's the thing is, like, Chicago right now, there's actually a lot of sites that are posting things about the statistics on a weekend in Chicago where 36 people die and nothing's reported, but it's supposedly, quote unquote, the safest city in the world because it has no guns. And people are starting to arm themselves, and they're actually getting arrested for doing so because of the laws of that actual area.
Well, yeah, because, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, my friends run another, like, podcast network, and they've got, like, a commercial that plays in between, and it's a guy who says, hey, I support gun control. I mean, I'm poor. All I can afford is a crowbar when I break into your house, so how am I supposed to protect myself when you pull a gun on me? You know, I mean, that's really what it is, and it's not surprising because, I mean, the government has a lot more in common with the criminal class than they do with any of us, that they would try to protect them, right? So I'm not... I teeter back and forth, right? Like, I don't know. Like, do you guys think that the government is stupid, or do you think the government is evil?
Both.
I think they're calculative.
I think that the stupid people are the boots on the street, and the evil people are the ones telling them what to do.
I don't think those people are stupid. I honestly think that government has its own agenda, and I've been a part of the government. For 8 years I was, and you know, I didn't vote, I didn't believe in much besides going to work, doing my job, and coming home. And I tell you, man, it's the corruption even in just the military in general shows you how horrible politics is, and it is an eye-opener. I had a friend that just came back from the Navy in Japan, and he told me about his story and in the Navy, and I was like, you know, it's softer than the Army, but it's the same thing. It's always the same corruption.
Yeah, I mean, you create an unaccountable entity that can kill anybody who you know, defies it, and let's just not be surprised if they start acting badly, I suppose.
Yes, well, unfortunately, we are drawing to the end of our hour, and we had a little difficulty. Apologize to our guest for that, but we really enjoyed having you on, Chris, and we hope that we can have you on again sometime, as you are amazing. Amazing philosopher, and you have a lot of great things to say. And I was, it's a pleasure to be able to discuss these things with you today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's ChristopherCantwell.com if anybody wants to go and find out more. Thanks a lot, guys.
And like him on Facebook and follow all the things he does. He's a rising star. He's up to number 26 or something on the. On the Lexus ratings for libertarian sites. He is just a, I think he's going to be a major spokesman for the libertarian movement in the days to come. So, and he was on our show. We're very proud of that.
Thanks so much, guys.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Double Cross Radio.
Break one more.